Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Stacy. How are you?
I feel like I've said that to you 64 times.
I think it's only been 63. You have to say it one more time.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Stacy. How are you? Does your neck sound like faker and faker the more you say it?
That was, is episode 64.
Fourth time. That's true.
It, right?
64.
So,
that sounds, we can retire next week.
Woohoo! Don't tease me. No, I'm not. I tease about quitting and retiring. It's just joke, people. Don't spam me freaking out. I'm fine. I'm actually doing really well. Like last weekend, where I praised what an awesome day I had and how well my weekend went. We continued the no TV, no video game week, and the children. They're wearing really, really awesome. And people who follow me on Instagram, you know that I had a big cook-up today for a special project that we're working on. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to have to go over to Instagram to find out. But normally when we do that sort of thing, we plop the children in front of the television because it's like a 3 or 4 hour thing where we really just need them to go away, which is terrible. Like, I love them, but there's no way you can, you know.
It is hard to be, as a somehow managed to turn myself into a full-time work-at-home parent from a full-time stay-at-home parent. It was like I call it my accidental career.
Yeah.
You know, it is really, really tough some days to not rely on the television for work time. I totally get that.
And they didn't get it. So let me be clear. They don't get that like 100% of the time.
Yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
Matt's home with them, like he's home with them and blah, blah, blah.
But, yeah.
So because we were working, we made 10 different dishes and we photographed them. It's a long day of work, and usually they like to help us in the kitchen cooking meals. Like if, you know, recipe for the blog or whatever, the kids love to help and they do that. But when you're cooking like 10 things and you're managing what goes in the oven at what temperature and what time so you can get the next thing in the oven and you can, you know, they don't want to be around that. Like they can feel the tension and the chaos and they want out of it. And normally we would have put them in front of the television, but today I was a little bit nervous how it was going to go because we're also potty training Wesley. And I just told Matt, I'm like, there's no way we can put him in front of the television because he'll go potty. Like he won't get up and go use the pee on the sofa or whatever. So we decided absolutely that we weren't going to turn on the TV for them. And shockingly, I mean, they just played so nicely together. The two older boys played Legos for a while, and then they all played some sort of card game, and they gave Wesley fake cards, so he felt like he was playing too.
Aww.
And it was just like, you know what? I just am feeling really connected and good lately. I made a post on the blog earlier this week about my 100-day update on strongman training, and down for a while about not being able to get back in the gym. I'd been so busy at work and I was feeling overwhelmed. I had a lot of things going on in my life and I decided, I mean, none of those things have changed, but I just kind of decided I was going to take control. And I'm like, I'm not going to let life control me. I am going to take control. And these are the things that I want. I want my kid potty trained. I want my kids respectful and behaving. I want to be training. And these are the things that I need to do to get there. And it's just been awesome to kind of say, all right, I'm going to do it and to go ahead with it. It's I'm freaking exhausted. but it's getting done, and I feel great. So despite having a cold, although I never really got kind of knocked down with the cold, I didn't miss any work. My sister has the same cold, and she looks like someone hit her with a Mack truck, and I didn't miss any work or anything. So
yeah, my kids have both had this cold, and it's been up and down. I mean, they're finally, I think, really most of the way better now. But it was the most up and down thing with them. So it was, you know, my oldest would miss a day of school and then would go back to school, but my youngest would miss a day of school. And then the next day, the youngest would go back to school, but the oldest would come home halfway through the day because she ended up getting these sinus headaches. And then they would both be home, and then they would both go. And it was just like, they both sort of had these, like, they would start to get better and then they would get worse again, and they would start to get better and then they would get worse again. Like, I think we're now, like, pretty solidly, their noses seem to be drying up and they're sleeping really well. And I think we're finally on the tail end, but this was not a fun, you know, cold. Like, you normally don't think of colds as being, like, so knock you flat. But it really was.
We're really fortunate. We don't get a lot of this stuff. Like, all of my team members at work had this last week, and I just crossed my fingers because they all come in to my office and breathe on me as I sign documents. And so I just was like crossing my fingers, and of course I made poor choices at Halloween and I didn't get good sleep last week. And I attribute that to my weakened immune system, but I've been citrus kombucha-ing it up with a lot of bone broth and getting better sleep, and I really feel very strong. I am not completely knocked out by this thing. So, anyway, I don't know that you even asked me how I was, but
I was going to anyways, even if I didn't technically. No, I'm pretty sure I went, "Hi, Stacy, how are you?"
Oh, good.
I'm pretty sure that's what I said.
At least you asked.
With that little high-pitched, awkward first line of every podcast that I do. Yeah, that one.
So did you check out my top secret can't keep a secret photos on Instagram?
Yeah. And I'm like going to come over pretty soon. Are you kidding me?
Absolutely.
So I'm so going to need a vacation because I'm getting my book back from the designers finally, either late tonight or tomorrow.
That's very exciting and also scary.
I know. Well, and it's also like the busiest week for me of the entire fall. I'm doing a posture workshop with Esther Gokley this week. So it's three full days.
She's like your guru.
I know. And I like signed up for this, like basically during AHS when I met her, and it was the coolest meeting because she knew who I was and I knew who she was, but I was geeking out way more than she was. And I was like, "Oh my God, you're Esther Gokley and I want to be your friend." And then it turned out like she's really, really cool and I love her. And she totally handled my like fangirling on her. So I signed up for this workshop way back then, thinking that for sure it would be, you know, my slightly bit of downtime between when the Paleo Approach goes to the printer and when all the materials for the Paleo Approach cookbook have to be submitted. And so it's this week, which is when I have to do my super intense 10 days of fine tooth comb, check absolutely everything for the book. And we are on a really tight time crunch right now because if we don't get it to the printer, I think in 12 days, it won't make bookstores on time. So we've got this, like, it's really tight. So I'm going to be doing that at the same time as I'm not giving up my posture workshop because I can't. I will be so miserable if I have to give that up. And then it's someone's birthday next weekend.
Not anyone we know.
And it also happens to be my youngest's fourth birthday. Her birthday is the day after mine. And so we have her birthday party on Saturday, and then it's my birthday on Sunday, and then it's her birthday on Monday. And so I've already gone like, okay, well, I guess I'll celebrate my birthday over Thanksgiving or something.
You will have a giant celebration when you get the email that says the file has been sent to the printer. That will be the best birthday present you ever get, trust me.
I think I joked at one point when we were trying to do some math to figure out when the book could actually come out. And one of the things with this book, so right now, apparently it's 410 pages, and the designers are just doing some final touches. And I'm really impressed. We combined 432, and they got it to 410. And so that's awesome. But it's just been, I mean, I think you were telling me that Beyond Bacon took 5 or 6 days with the designer, and this has been 23. So it's just everything with this book takes so much longer than it's ever taken with any other book. And it just always, it's surprising all of us. Like it's, and it's awesome. Like I can't wait for this, you know, very, very big baby to be born into the world. And just, you know, it's going to be, it's just going to be so awesome. I'm really excited about it, but it's been such a learning experience, and it's been a learning experience for me, but for my publisher, because they've never done a book like this. It's just so much more, it's more technical, but not in a way that people aren't going to be able to understand it, but it really goes into a lot more science, and it's just so much bigger, and it's so much more detailed than anything that they've done. So it's fun. I think we're all looking forward to it actually being on bookshelves. I'm excited.
Doing a thing where I was offering you support and encouragement, and I was on mute the whole time, and I was like,
aww.
Oh my gosh, why isn't Sarah like responding? The fact that I'm
saying
acknowledging her, and then I realized I was on mute. So yes, yes, Beyond Bacon took that long, but you have a lot different design templates and more information.
Basically, every page is
graphics
different,
and illustrations and all kinds of stuff to put in there. And honestly, to say that you have like 10 days to final edit the book sounds very scary to me. I think that we had about that amount of time to do Beyond Bacon, and it's a lot less technical, and it was about half, maybe a little bit longer, but that had a lot of pictures in it. So anyway, good luck to you, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's just going to be, I think, a week of, I mean, what I basically started saying in July is I'm doing everything I reasonably can do every single day, and I can't do any more, and I'm just doing as much as I can, and that's just going to have to be good enough. And once I switched my attitude to that was when I had more good days than bad days in terms of being able to handle the stress of the book.
So I just decided that the theme of the show is perspective and change of attitude, because that was my diatribe, and now you're saying that that's helpful for you.
Mm-hmm.
And because of what we have lined up, I think that that might be
that's a good theme
as well.
I like that.
Are you ready for a segue?
That's an excellent segue to our like super cool guest for this week.
Yeah, so a lot of our listeners probably haven't heard of our guest this week. This is the first time anyone kind of what I would call out of the paleo circle or community in general. And I'm hoping that it's helpful for people to, number one, learn a different resource, but also, number two, see that a lot of the philosophies that Sarah and I talk about and embrace are actually kind of making their way out into the real world, as I would call it, outside of the paleo bubble. I live within the paleo bubble. Sarah, you live within the paleo bubble.
The bubble.
We have paleo friends, and we do things, and we think about food in a different way than other people think about food, and everybody does, but it's not really the case. So our guest today is living outside the paleo bubble, but doing a lot of work within their own community to impart upon whomever they can reach the method of eating real food, and specifically living grain-free and sugar-free in an effort to be healthy and fit. So when we kind of connected with the angriest trainer, it was really kind of an opportunity for us to bridge that gap. And we're kind of excited to see where the interview goes. And I know, Sarah, you did some research on the topic. Are we calling that your science with Sarah, the research that you did with Vinny?
Can we please?
Yes. So I know you kind of checked out the book on our behalf and came up with some information and questions for us to ask him, and we'll kind of call that science this week. I think that we might touch on a little bit. I know part of the reason that he is passionate about not eating grains or sugar is from a hormonal perspective. So we'll probably touch a little bit on that with him, and that we'll just kind of weave research and science into our interview with Vinny, and hopefully it works out.
I'm excited.
Cool. You ready to get to it?
Let's.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So, welcome to the Paleo View, Vinny. I think we just recorded a podcast on your podcast with Matt and I, so thank you for having us on. This will kind of be an introduction for you with Sarah. And also our listeners, I think, probably might not be familiar with you as America's Angriest Trainer. Do you maybe want to give us a little bit of your elevator pitch, as we like to call it, and let our listeners know where they might be able to find you?
Absolutely. Everyone gets confused and go, is this guy angry? Is he going to be like a Jillian Michaels guy and just yell at me the whole time? I'm not an angry guy, and that's the first thing people realize when they come over to the Angriest Trainer podcast. My pitch is, I'm angry because your good intentions have been stolen. You know, I've been in this industry for over 30 years, and I never wanted to write a book. You know, I live in Hollywood, and I work with celebrities, so people have always wanted me to do infomercials, and I've categorically turned them all down. And I could have been a millionaire by now. You know, I could have been driving around a Ferrari from just doing the infomercials I could have done over the years. But I didn't want to be the guy that was out there lying to people. We always think about my parents back in Louisiana, you know, and I don't want them to be lied to by me. And that's just the way I work. And I started the Angriest Trainer podcast. We've done over 210 shows now. And everyone comes to it and they go, well, wait, you're not angry at all. You seem to be a nice guy. No, I'm a nice guy. I'm angry because an industry stole your good intentions. The one thing I do want to say about the Angriest Trainer podcast, even though there's a little red sign on each podcast that says explicit, sometimes people don't see that. They might be in a car and they're not really looking and they'll plunk it down. If you have kids in your car, sometimes, and we don't try to be that, it's not like I'm sitting there just dropping F-bombs, but sometimes in the middle of a rant, that kind of thing can happen. And I'm not the type of guy that's going to go back and clean it up. Whatever we lay down is what we lay down. And people appreciate that. Some people have a problem with that. So, if you have a problem with, some words, every now and then, it's not all the time. As a matter of fact, one of the things we're getting ready to do is some of the parents have asked us if we could do some kid-friendly shows that their kids can listen to, because they never know. Parents have to vet it first to make sure there's no bad words in it. It's not like we say it every time. But I do want to make sure that people understand that.
Great. Well, thanks for that. And other than your Fitness Confidential and your Angriest Trainer, can people find you online? Connected in the social media, so to speak?
I'm very connected. I'm a guy that barely understands how to turn a computer on. In the past year and a half since I started doing this, of course I'm on Twitter. People ask questions there. I'm on Facebook. My regular Facebook account has maxed out at 5,000 people. We have a Vinny fan page, which sounds weird. Vinny Todorich fan page people can go to. And there are groups on Facebook that have my name on them. And I don't own the group. I'm not the curator of the group. There's one called Vinny Todorich's No Sugars, No Grains, which I'm a member of, like everyone else. I think there's a couple of thousand in that one. There's one called Vinny Todorich's Plant Power, No Sugars, No Grains. That's a vegan group that eats no sugars, no grains. And I'm a member of that too. And there's a Vinny's No Sugars, No Grains Ladies, which is a ladies group, but I'm a member in that too. They've made me an honorary lady for that group. So there are a lot of groups out there that talk about everything we talk about on the podcast. We do 3 shows a week, Anna Vocino and myself. And we do those shows week in and week out. There's never any break. So people get used to hearing us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And on VinnieTortorese.com, I go in and do a couple of blogs on top of that per week. I'm out there. You can find me easily.
So that's an excellent segue to your main message when it comes to health, which is really don't eat sugar or grains, eat real food, and get some exercise.
Right.
And I love how you've simplified that message to something I think that is really basic and approachable for most people. I mean, some people do have a hard time wrapping their heads around giving up grains, as Stacey and I both are very familiar with. But I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how you sort of came to those very basic tenets of, you know, what leads to good health. Like, tell us a little bit about your story. You have a very fascinating story, and I think our listeners would love to hear about it.
Well, first of all, my job is easy because, as I think I mentioned already, I work with actors and actresses, and they have a, you know, that's how they make their living. They have to be in shape. You know, they have to be sexy on screen. So when I go in to do my job, I don't get a whole lot of pushback. They don't care how the sausage is made. They just want it to be made, so to speak. But the interesting thing is when, you know, 30 some odd years ago when I was at Tulane University, which is largely a medical university, I was there on a football scholarship, and I decided to do something that most football players don't do and get an education. And I wanted to be an educator, and I wanted my secondary education part to be physical education because I was always a physical guy. And it turns out Tulane didn't really have a physical education department at the time. So I was in all of the education, you know, classes, except to get my physical education degree. They put me in class with all the pre-med students. So I had to take all of the biologies, kinesiologies. I took gross anatomy. I had my own cadaver. So I may be the most overqualified, you know, PE teacher in the world because of what I had to take. And since I was super interested in it, you know, I would be in class and the professor would say, okay, the body preferred fuel is fat. And a very young Vinny at 18 years old would write down, okay, the body wants fat. Okay, good. And then the professor would, you know, within a week or so, you would hear him say, well, if you want to run long distances, if you're going to do anything aerobic, your body needs a lot of sugar. It needs a lot of glucose. Your body needs sugar. It needs glycogen. That's how your muscles work. And I would raise my hand and go, Prof, about a week ago, I have it written right here. You said the body's preferred fuel is fat. And then everybody in the class would go, oh boy, here we go. You know, the guy that doesn't even want to be a doctor, who, by the way, was setting the curve in most of those classes, he was asking a sensible question. And the professors would go, yeah, your body uses fat as fuel, but if you want to run, well, wait a minute, Prof, if you're saying this, why are you now saying that? And they would start going, oh boy, you know, why don't you just let us do our job and get you through to the next class? But that's where my journey started well over 30 years ago. And I was kind of a two-faced trainer. You know, for me, who's an ultra athlete, who rides bikes for ungodly amounts of time, I always lived on the theory that I had to keep eating grains and sugars in order to ride a bike 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours at a clip. Yet I would tell all my Hollywood clients that you had to be, you know, no sugars, no grains. So I was a two-faced trainer for a lot of years until I threw up one time too many on a bicycle and said, you know what? I wonder if I can do this and just live off of fat. And it turns out I was able to do it. And that's kind of how, maybe 10 years ago, I started changing into that and really got into it by 2000 and 2007, 2008, I was crossing over, especially since I had gone through cancer, which should have killed me. You know, that was my final straw.
I just finished reading your book this afternoon, and your story of your journey through leukemia was absolutely inspiring. And I would love for you to share with our listeners how you got roped into getting bone marrow biopsies without anesthesia.
I wasn't roped into it. I suggested it. And as I said in the book, had I thought about it for one more moment and realized exactly where bone marrow was located in your body, I wouldn't have done it. Here's what happened. I was good friends with one of the two doctors. My friend is a world-renowned radiation oncologist, and she was getting me to the best. You know, everybody knows the best. You know, I realized, oh, my guy's the best. But she got me to the best blood doctor in L.A. And subsequently, this woman turns out to be, you know, one of the foremost authorities on blood on the planet. And she was sitting there. We were nonchalantly sitting there looking at my blood work, and they knew something was wrong, but she couldn't exactly say what it was. So my doctor says, look, you know what needs to be done. And this woman started hemming and hawing, the blood doctor. She's like, well, she's looking at her watch and she's going, yeah, my kid has got a horse. You know, my kid is jumping tonight in a horse competition. And she, you know, I don't do this in the office anymore. I ship it out to Cedars, and, you know, he can get it done on Monday. And my doctor friend was saying, Becky, let's do it now. Her real name is Becky. And she said, well, you know, I've already let my nurses go for the day. It was late in the day. And Patty said, my doctor friend said, look, I will assist. I'll be your nurse. You go in, get the bone marrow. And then she started and went, well, you know, we usually knock them out, or at least we do, you know, kind of a local. And I said, go in and get it. You don't have to numb me up. Let's just go in. You get what you need. And that's how we did it. And subsequently, as you've read in the book, I've done 3 bone marrow biopsies. I think 4 now, all without anesthesia, because I'm like the John Wayne. You know, they see me walking in and go, that, you know, I hear the nurses, oh, that guy doesn't need anesthesia. And God only knows, I want anesthesia now, but I can't.
Because you know? You set this precedent. That, when I read that in the book, I really was like crying. I was laughing so hard. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was the dumbest move I've ever made.
I just thought the story of getting sort of stuck into being the guy who has to do it without anesthetic. It's...
got a reputation.
Yeah, and you know, I do. And one of my close friends is, I'm name dropping right now, is the comedian Howie Mandel. And, you know, here it is, what, 2014 almost. This happened in 2007. So it was 7 years ago. He still brings it up about twice a year. We'll be having dinner and he'll go, okay, tell me how this happened again. And tell me why you can't go and ask them to do that. He can't wrap his mind around the fact that I can't be man enough to say, can you shoot me up? And I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around that.
So,
yeah.
You talked a little bit about kind of where you got in your path to get on the path where you are now. And, you know, you talked a bit about no sugar, no grains in the two-faced approach there. And now you're fueling yourself with fat and, you know, walking the walk, not just talking the talk. So I think it would be really interesting for some of our listeners to hear from the, you know, you have a little bit of a different perspective in that, you know, Sarah and I often talk about transition. We talk about it, you know, 80-20 rule, which we kind of touched on your show. But not necessarily needing to be perfect at everything. And I think your approach of kind of focusing on real food and just avoiding sugar and grains would be interesting for our listeners. And I think an interesting tidbit that I learned on your show is that alcohol is out for you. And although paleo people say alcohol is what we would consider part of our 20%, we don't consider it a sugar, and we don't completely shun it unless someone has like a detrimental health condition. So I'm kind of interested to hear a little more too about where you draw the line and where you would recommend drawing the line for someone coming in to be your client. Kind of how do you sell Fitness Confidential, so to speak?
Okay, Fitness Confidential is somewhat different from what I sell onto clients. So in other words, let me clear up the alcohol thing first. Alcohol is definitely allowed on my diet. The things I tell people not to have are the sugary or the grainy alcohols. Meaning not the distilled stuff. Beer is off.
Yeah.
Because that's like eating liquid bread. wine is out except for on occasion. Again, wine is like a glass full of sugar. That's the way your liver sees it. This is not Vinny talking. When this stuff gets to your liver doesn't go, oh, wait a minute. That Sarah had some some wine. I'm going to let that go. Your liver doesn't lie. You know, your liver is going to process what gets to it. So wine is generally out unless, you know, you're at a party and someone's serving the best glass of wine you've ever had. That's when you put a little life into living. And any liqueur is out, like a limoncello or any of those sweet kind of distilled liquors. The ones you can have are the distilled liquors, your vodkas, your scotches, your blends, your bourbons. You can have all of those if you have them by themselves. You can have tequila, but as soon as you make it a margarita, you might as well have licked all the icing off of a chocolate cake. You know, so that's the liquor portion of it.
How do you feel about gin?
If you are an actress, I think you can have gin. I think that's a distilled liquor. So I'm not a gin guy, so I don't know. But I think it's a distilled, so you can have that.
Yeah, I think gin is distilled. All right. You're safe.
You're gaining points with me now. All right.
I love when I talk to true alcoholics like myself. You know what I'm saying? Oh, can I have gin? Can I just have my gin? Yeah, of course you can. And I'm not calling you an alcoholic.
No,
I'm not either.
I don't drink that much, but go ahead.
Okay, you're an alcoholic. You know, here's the thing. If you were an actress that came to me and you just had a baby and you need to be on a red carpet inside of 4 weeks, you ever see those women? You see them and they go, oh, she just had a baby 4 weeks ago, and they're on the red carpet and they look perfectly fine.
Yeah.
They probably had me or someone like me get them there. And by the way, not every trainer are like we are. There's a handful of us that do this work. And the agents have us on speed dial, and the managers have us on speed dial, and we get called in. And usually in those cases, we have these people who have to lose weight really fast for a role or to be on a red carpet or to go do a bikini shot. Believe it or not, you know when you see all those actresses on the cover of a magazine, they happen to be coming out of the water and it was just like a paparazzi happened to catch them at their best moment coming out of the water. 99% of the time, that's a staged shot. Bruce Springsteen was on the beach in Malibu a couple of weeks ago and everyone, oh, Bruce is in his mid-60s and look how great he looks. That was probably a staged shot. That's not accident. That happens on purpose.
Oh, yeah. It's like
the ones that don't happen on purpose is when you see the. Yeah. That's all that, you know, they're all in cahoots. The paparazzi and the agents and the whole thing, they're all in cahoots. And they hire people like me to get them ready for those shots. In those cases, those people are usually on a ketogenic diet, you know. They're in dietary ketosis. But I don't preach that anyone has to be that way. You know, you can eat all the fruit and vegetables you want as long as the fruit is a berry and you don't go any further than an apple or on occasion an orange. Everything else, all the tropical fruits, is nothing but a big sugar bump and it's going to cause you to get fat. So we try to stay away from those. You can have vegetables, but I tell people not to have vegetable juice. I don't care how fresh squeezed it is. When it hits your liver, you will get a glycogen bump. And when that happens, your body's going to release leptin, it's going to release ghrelin, and it's going to release insulin, and you're going to be off and running. So even when people are not in dietary ketosis, you know, because I have two groups. when they're not in dietary ketosis, they can still be very well fat adapted. And that's kind of where the paleo folks fall in. You know, you're fat adapted. That's why you started losing weight. You became sensitive to insulin, leptin, and ghrelin again. That's why you guys lost all that weight. Am I making sense, or did I go off the scale there?
No,
that?
We love to talk about those hormones here.
Yeah, I'm a ghrelin geek myself, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I just did a talk. I just did a talk at Good Samaritan Hospital last week. I was the only non-cardiologist on the panel. And it's up right now on Vimeo. It's and it's kid friendly. You know, I don't use any words. I was in a group in front of a group of people, and it was I was asked to speak for 20 minutes, and I spoke for 19 of those 20 minutes, and I put a 12-minute version up, and it went so well that they asked me to come back next year, and they're going to pay me 5 times what they paid me this year, and you know, they want me to come back and talk because it went so well. And basically, I gave a talk on, in the cartoon version, of how when you eat a Dorito, what happens? You know, how ghrelin is released and how insulin is released and how, leptin is released. I talked about that stuff, and I linked it to how women feel, because it was an older women's audience that was primarily there. And I linked it to hot flashes. I said, you know, when women hit a certain age and they start to get hot flashes, when their hormones start to change, these hot flashes are going to happen. You cannot control them. You know, no matter what you do, you cannot control them unless you take a different hormone that will control it for you. But we can't sit there and control hormones. Yet, for some reason, we think that people can eat corn chips and then control the hormone flash that happens right afterwards. You see, one we think is silly, and the other one we go, oh, wait, you don't understand. It, you know, it's menopause. It's going to happen. These hot flashes are going to happen. Yet when you do it in the opposite direction, we think, oh, we're supposed to be able to control this, but we can't.
Oh, that's a really neat analogy.
So Sarah put together this outline for us, and one of the things that she put in here says that you talk in the book about something called an economy of fitness and losing the middle class. And I would love to hear my Cliff Notes version doesn't give me the full information. So can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Yeah. You know, I've been in this game for, you know, as you know, a long time, even before college. I'd always been, you know, ever since I was 8 years old and the first time I walked into a gym, you know, back then, you know, in the early, say, we're talking 8 years old, it was like 1970 or 71. I mean, think about it. Nixon was in the White House. We were in Vietnam. Watergate hadn't happened yet. That's how long ago I walked into a gym. And, you know, back then, nobody was fat. I grew up in a small town of 6,000 people where you pretty much know everyone. And everyone was thin and fit. We had one fat guy in town. And by the way, by today's standards, Mr. Lemon, who probably weighed 275 pounds, is not the fattest guy around. We generally see 400, 500, 600-pound people now. So what's happened, just like we've lost the middle class financially of this country, you know, we either have people on food stamps or we have people on, you know, making bazillions of dollars, you know. So people are either, you know, riding the bus to work or they're driving Ferraris to work. You know, the part of the economy that used to shore us up in this country was the middle class, which by and large has gone away. There's no, you know, you can't deny that. We have no middle class financially in this country. And by and large, we've lost the fitness middle class. You either have people on one end of the spectrum who weigh 500, 600, 700 pounds. The example I use in the book is, you know, the Small World ride at Disney, you know, land out here in California had to shut the ride down for a better part of a year to dredge it out because people are so heavy now that they were bottoming out the boats at Disney World. And just look around. We have nothing but morbidly obese people in this country. We have type 2 diabetes. We have metabolic syndrome. We have no middle class, but you go right to people running ultras, people running triathlons, people running, you know, marathons. So you have the rich people, which are the marathoners and the ultra guys and the triathlon people, and you have the 500 and 600 pound people with metabolic syndrome who also are breaking the healthcare system. We don't have that middle class of healthy people that we had at one time. And I was trying to make that point in the book so that people can realize we really have a problem.
That's a really interesting analogy for me. I think for me personally, I do think that there is still a middle class. I think it's just very difficult to be a middle class person. But I still agree with your analogy. I know.
Are you talking about the fitness or the financial?
I think more from a financial perspective. But I think for the sake of the analogy, you know, I think that there are a lot of, particularly the people that, you know, listen to our podcast or follow our blogs are a lot of family members, a lot of moms who, you know, try to do the best that they can with a limited budget because they are part of, you know, a middle class or even a middle upper class, but in some cases really struggling with their budget. And it's difficult to, when you've got a family, oftentimes working mothers, and you're trying to take care of your family, you're trying to take care of health, you're trying to eat right on a limited budget, which isn't the easiest thing to do. And then you throw in the mix fitness, it can often be difficult, both from a financial and a time perspective.
You're linking the financial middle class with the fitness
right
middle class, or sort of, you know, basically saying it's really hard to be that healthy person that walks that balance, that's not an elite athlete but is also, you know, healthy and fit, when we're also in a situation where it's really difficult from a budget standpoint,
from a
not just budget from
yeah.
financial, but also time management.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's really, really tough when you're
I think
a working parent.
That reason it logically ties that we kind of are losing that class of people because they either decide that it's something that's really important to them and they're going to go for the gusto, which in our case is what we did, right? We decided, you know what, health was really important to us. And in January, we started CrossFit and we took it really seriously. And we go multiple times a week and we really, you know, devote our time to it. Or someone says, you know what, I just really don't have the time or the finances or the both to do this. And they just kind of, I don't want to say give up, but they decide like they don't have the capability to do that at that time, which would make sense of why we're kind of losing that piece of the fit middle class, because we're also losing the piece of the fit financial piece, which takes time and money away from people being able to, you know, to
work out. But think about, you know, you had mentioned earlier in this little statement that, you know, you think we have a financial middle class in this country, but think about it. I'm a middle class guy. I'm an upper middle class guy that does not have to financially raise a kid. My stepdaughter is the money comes from her father, but I'm an upper middle class income earner, and because I'm just me and Serena, and she makes a good living, we get to live without debt. You know, we're lucky to not have debt other than a mortgage. But besides that, we have to, you know, watch our P's and Q's. A lot of people making the same amount of money that we're making that has to support 2, 3, 4 kids, they're putting money on credit cards. You know, they're financing their kids into, you know, I have friends who make the same amount of money as I do. They're not driving fancy cars. They're not taking expensive vacations. And for God's sake, they're not wearing it. And I can tell you that these people tell me all the time, you go out to dinner with them and you go, oh my God, we're $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in credit card debt. They're financing their futures away. And these are the people who used to be able to live like I live, a guy that doesn't have to support a kid and put the kid in school and do all those things. If I had to support Tallulah, I would have credit card debt at my income. I know that definitely. So, you know, in that case, and by the way, the middle class is what used to shore up our income in this country. And that's the same group that doesn't get to spend the way they used to spend. You know, people have to put things on credit cards nowadays. And if you carry that over to the fitness middle class, it's the same sort of thing. You know, we feel like we're less than if we can't make it to four cross-training, CrossFit classes a week, or we can't make it to the gym. I have people tell me all the time, oh, I try to stay in shape, but I'm not like you. Well, I'm not asking you to be like me. I'm asking you to be like you. And until we bring that fitness middle class back, and until we get some of these morbidly obese people back to the middle class, we're going to be in trouble, and we're going to be in big trouble. Dr. Robert Lustig just put another video out. Do you, you know, did you guys see his first video?
Fructose, the bitter truth. Yeah, it's sugar, the bitter truth.
The first one was sugar, bitter truth. Now he has another one out that came out just a couple of weeks ago called Fat Chance 2.0, fructose, I think. And he's talking about the, he starts it off by talking about the alarming rate of people with metabolic syndrome. And if we don't think that's going to break us as a country, you know, all the Obamacare in the world will not save us from that. It just won't. You know, we're not that big. We're not that strong financially. So that's where the whole tie-in from the financial middle class versus the fitness middle class came from.
Well, I think this is really powerful to something that you said when we did our podcast earlier, which is that you don't think that fitness is the answer to losing weight, even though you're a trainer. That it's really about food for you. And I think that kind of brings it, you know, it brings it all around in a nice little package with a bow. That's why, at least what my understanding is, that you really advocate no sugar, no grains, because as people lose weight and get closer into that middle class, a lot of people can do what Sarah and I did, which is start to feel better and start to move around and take their kids on walks around the neighborhood, or, you know, do active things that aren't necessarily a huge time commitment or a huge financial commitment with a personal trainer or CrossFit, or things that are more of an investment, either time, financial, or both, and really kind of get their bodies moving as they feel better when they're losing, eating real foods that nourish their bodies rather than, you know, put a bunch of junk in and cause the hormonal issues that you were talking about earlier.
Well, you know, the one thing I start every speech with, the one I have up now on Vimeo, I mention it. I talk about it on my podcast. It's in my book. The one thing I use two examples as to why exercise is a horrible way to lose weight. The first example is I say it, and I always remind people that I make my living off of asking people to exercise. That's how I bring dollar bills into my life. Okay. And I'm the first person to say this is an awful way to try to lose weight. The second example I always give, and I gave this example in the book, is you'll see people crossing the finish line at the 17-hour mark, which is the end of a full-length triathlon. These people have trained hard enough to be able to swim 2.2 or 3 miles in the water, ride a bike for 112 miles, get off of that bike and run a complete marathon, and they still cross that line at 250 to 300 pounds. Most of them have worked for a year, sometimes 2 years, to get to that point. They've done 20 hours, sometimes 30 hours of aerobics per week towards the end, yet they were still fat. And if exercise worked to help them lose weight, they wouldn't have an extra pound to lose. That's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, that's a good point. Absolutely.
So how am I supposed to tell a housewife, hey, go do 3 hours of aerobics a week, when I know that a guy doing 25 hours of aerobics a week still can't lose the weight? It's a lie. And I'm not out there to perpetuate lies.
Yeah, I think that was certainly my experience, was that changing what I was eating was by far the most important thing that I did to lose weight. And, you know, really other than that, all I did was walk a little. And I mean, even still, I pretty much walk and do yoga. I'm not really into, the sort of heavier, or more intense exercise that Stacey's doing, because, you know, I'm feel great, and this is really working for me. And I think that we have a lot of listeners that are kind of in the same boat. They're trying to figure out how to put the pieces together. And I always recommend focusing on diet first. And then once you get lighter, you want to move your body more. It's almost like you get thin to exercise rather than exercise to get thin.
What happens is, one of the things, I want to make two statements here. One of the things is when people start losing weight and their body starts burning fat, that's what makes them want to exercise. Their body starts getting energized by the fat. So it's not just a product of losing weight. It's how your body is burning calories, which adds to my calories, not a calorie speech, which I will not get into tonight. I'm sure you guys have seen enough. But, you know, people also say to me, well, Vinny, if I don't need to exercise to lose weight, why should I exercise at all? And, you know, the reason Stacy's exercising, the reason I exercise all the time, is the reason why anyone exercises is because it's a use it or lose it proposition. You know, we have to stay in cardiac health. You know, and the only way you're going to do that is by doing aerobic exercise. We have to stay in anaerobic health. You know, we have to keep our cardiomuscular system working. Sorry, I'm losing it a little bit. Our skeletal muscular system working well. The only way to do that is through exercise. You want to keep your blood circulating. The only way you can do that is through exercise. I always tell people, you know, if you ever look at an older woman, and it's usually women, you'll see them, and some of them will get up from a chair, and you'll see them walking across the room, and they seem to still have great posture, and they seem to walk gracefully. And when they get out of a chair, they're graceful. And when they sit down, they're graceful. And sooner or later, if you ask someone, they'll say, oh, she's been dancing her whole life. She's a dancer. Well, what has she done as a dancer? She's kept up her flexibility, so she doesn't move ponderous and old like an older woman. She, you know, she has some cardiac health, so she's not going, ugh, every time she gets up. You know, it's little things that can make you look young for the rest of your life. You know, I always look at Serena's mom, who's 75 or 76 years old. Serena's my better half. And the woman still looks like a young woman. You know, she moves as well as her daughter, who's, you know, Serena's 52 years old. She still moves as well as Serena does. You know?
Yeah, you get that.
And
in
Serena's got a body.
As well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
flexibility,
you get the 80, 90-year-olds, you know, totally, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Doing amazing stuff beside you that makes, like, the effort that you're putting into a particular pose, like, look ridiculous because you're watching this, like, 85-year-old beside you, like, yeah, completely
awesome.
Yeah,
they're kind of showing off, and you go,
they
oh.
They are. Those
you know what? Those ladies have earned showing off.
Absolutely.
They have earned
absolutely.
The respect.
Look, I want to be an 85-year-old woman one day in an aerobic class.
Totally.
I want to.
My gym actually, what they affectionately called the old lady class. It was like a group of ladies that instead of doing bridge, they came in and lifted weights. And I would love to hear the stories about these ladies, like, doing their deadlifts. And I'm like, I want to be that lady. I want to be 85 years old coming to the gym and doing a deadlift. Like, that, those ladies are good to go. They're, like you said, they're able to move, they're flexible, they likely don't have osteoporosis because they're building bone density. Like, it's just, it's so important from a fitness perspective and how it helps with health. But I think it's awesome to hear from a trainer that it's not the end of that, you know, food and how you nourish yourself and how you fuel your body, which is what Sarah and I talk about week after week, is really important for weight loss, and it's also really important for health, you know, and fitness is a component of that, but not the only way.
You know, my better half is an actress, and she was a Bond girl way back, and Serena is 52 now, and she still looks like she did when she was in her Bond movie back in the 90s. And, you know, we go to a lot of Bond conventions where, you know, Marta Adams and all the famous Bond women show up, you know, they sign autographs and do the whole thing. So I get to hang around with these women. And some of them have kept it together, and some of them you will not recognize, literally. But when you sit down and talk to them, the ones who, you know, say, oh, yeah, I do a Pilates class 3 times a week, or, oh, yeah, I do a yoga class, or, oh, yeah, I do this, I do that, those women's just look like an older version of what they were when they were in their Bond movie, some of them 40 years ago. And some of them who do nothing do not look good at all. And I won't mention any names, but, you know, it's just amazing the difference, you know, and watching these older celebrities and how some of them have kept it together and some of them haven't.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely motivation to, you know, figure out how to fit activity into our lives.
Yeah.
Well, Vinny, thanks so much for coming on the show. I just want to remind people you can find more of Vinny on his podcast, America's Angriest Trainer, and read more in his book, Fitness Confidential. And like he mentioned earlier, we'll put links in the show notes to his website and social media if you want to check out more.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.